Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against our depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's the Scott Horton Show. I'm Scott Horton. The website is scotthorton.org. Keep all my interview archives there, and whole show archives, too. scotthorton.org. And you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /Scott Horton Show. And our next guest on the show is David Enders from McClatchy Newspapers, McClatchy's man in Syria. Welcome back, David. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, I guess I was about to say safe and sound back in Lebanon, but then I keep hearing about terrible violence spreading over from Syria into Lebanon. Can we start with that?
Yeah, in the past couple of days, there have been, there were rockets fired, into southern Beirut, into an area under Hezbollah control, presumably in response to a speech by Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, about his group's involvement in the fighting in Syria.
Can you describe what's been going on and how bad it is, or does it look like it's going to get worse? I guess one thing I'll add to the question is I read something a few months ago about how Lebanese were really determined to not let this thing fall apart like last time.
Well, yeah, Hezbollah essentially controls a lot of the Lebanese state. Their involvement in the war in Syria obviously increases the likelihood that Lebanon will be dragged into the conflict. At the moment, there does seem to be a lot of support from the Hezbollah base for what's happening. Although at the moment, militarily, no one can really challenge them inside Lebanon. So it would be somewhat of a suicidal battle, potentially, for some of the people who might like to fight it. That said, there is the potential for more revenge attacks.
Yeah. All right. Now, I guess, can you tell us, when you make these trips into Syria, you're basically, your beat is just covering Jabhat al-Nusra, right? You're not really trying to embed with the Syrian army or something like that. You're covering the rebels side of the story,
it's
right?
It's very difficult for me to get a visa to cover things from the government side. Although when I'm in, I'm with the rebels, not with Nusra. Generally, they're a faction within the rebel movement.
Right. And now, can you help break down the percentages here? Because John McCain has, as you know, I'm sure, has gone to Syria to meet with the rebels. And, of course, the slogans have always been from the Republicans and the Democrats that we're trying to help the non-Nusra rebels so that the Nusra rebels don't win, basically. And yet, at the same time, as you've written, the money and the arms tend to end up in the hands of the Nusra guys because they're the ones doing most and the best of the fighting. So,
not entirely the Nusra guys. There are other groups that are also doing a lot of fighting. The promises, the idea that the American government would arm moderate groups of rebels and that some of that support wouldn't find its way to extremist groups is far fetched. That said, creating, so the Supreme Military Council, which is led by a defected general named Mohammed Idris, which is who McCain met with when he went in a couple days ago, doesn't have much leverage at the moment. Rebel groups are willing to work with it to the extent that it can provide weapons. And so you really need a significant flow of weapons for them to have any real leverage. And I just don't see that happening at this point, let alone the fact that the group's structure you know, sort of coordination at best. It's not, you know, a top-down military that's taking orders across large parts of the country. The rebel groups are very, very localized.
And now, so what are we to make of the announced merger of the al-Nusra Front with al-Qaeda in Iraq? And there are reports, of course, you cover this in the article here, about infighting over whether their loyalty is supposed to be to the Iraqis first or to Zawahiri in his auntie's basement in Pakistan, wherever he's hiding or whatever, this kind of thing.
I think that split is probably negligible. Either way, at the end of the day, both groups are affiliated with al-Qaeda, whether or not one is a subgroup of the other one. Basically, they've stated to do much, you know, their intent is to do much the same thing, which is create an Islamic State in the case of Nusra, well, in the case of both groups, in the greater Middle East, not just in Syria and Iraq. So I think the amount of infighting has probably been misrepresented. It doesn't seem Nusra has particularly lost strength or removed itself from a number of fronts as a result of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I guess, is it fair to say then that those who are most interested in having regime in the West, I mean, in the halls of power in America and in the other Western capitals, those who would be rid of Assad, they really don't have anyone but the Nusra Front to turn to, basically. It sounds like what you're saying.
That's not exactly true. There's a wide rebel movement, but a lot of the fighting is being done by groups like Nusra, radical groups like Nusra. There's also a large, more Syrian-oriented group called Dhar al-Sham, which is also calling for an Islamic State in Syria. At the moment, though, those are the groups that have the best command and control structure on the ground.
Mm-hmm. And you've written also about the Farouk brigades, and you say they actually are determined to have elections, and that's their big beef with the Nusra guys, is that they don't want elections. Is that correct?
That's correct. Although I think probably their bigger beef with the Nusra guys is over turf and over resources, as opposed to particularly over ideology. And a lot of people probably heard about or saw that horrific YouTube video of the rebel commander cutting out a Syrian soldier's lung and taking a bite of it. That guy's a Farouk commander.
Really, not even the al-Nusra Front. That's the guys who want to hold an election.
You have a serious problem with, you know, preventing atrocities by any rebel group.
Wow, those are the moderates. So, and now
I mean, that guy's lost the plot a little bit, but
yeah.
But as an example,
right? Well, and now, so this gets to the whole question of what really is al-Qaeda, too, because, you know, like in Iraq, it was always in America's interest to pretend like Zarqawi represented all of the insurgency, because they liked the idea that no Iraqi had any reason to insurge other than they're part of this monsters group of terrorist nutcases or whatever, you know. But virtually none of these people were friends with Osama on September 10th, or, you know, were one of his couple of dozen friends who got bombed and barely escaped at Tora Bora or whatever, right? So what is it exactly that makes these guys al-Qaeda? The fact that they say they like Zawahiri, or the fact that they use suicide bombing tactics, or
right, officially it's their pledge to Zawahiri and their calls for an Islamic State in the Middle East. This notion of sort of pan-Arab or pan-Muslim jihadism creating an Islamic caliphate. That's sort of what officially defines them.
Yeah. But I mean, what used to define them was that America was their designated enemy, as opposed to the local dictator here, there, or the other Middle Eastern country, right? That was what made them unique among Mujahideen who existed all over the place.
Well, what made them unique was bin Laden's attack on the U.S. Other than that, I mean, their stated, even with bin Laden, the stated goal was to create this caliphate.
Yeah, which apparently the American war in Iraq has really helped them do. You know, there's an article by Patrick Coburn and by Patrick Buchanan today at antiwar.com, both of them asking if this is the end of the Sykes-Picot agreement. And basically that means, is this the end of that European drawn line between Syria and Iraq?
Well, to some extent, yes. Those are the dynamics that are playing out. You have lots of regional conflicts that are occurring within these borders that were drawn ill-considering minority and majority communities whose animosities towards one another were often increased by one side or the other leveraging the colonial power. For instance, the Sunnis in Iraq becoming essentially British proxies in the face of a Shiite uprising in the 20s and remaining in power in Iraq until the overthrow of Saddam Hussein in 2003. So in many ways, this does look like sort of the de facto partitioning of Syria and perhaps not officially redrawing the borders, but effectively redrawing borders. Iraq is more or less three countries now. And Syria is moving much along the same lines.
Yeah, it's amazing how the Republicans' war in Iraq was fought at least partially, according to the neoconservatives, to check the power of the so-called Shiite Crescent. But they were the ones who really made it. And, of course, we can read articles in the press this week about Iraqi Shiite militias traveling to Syria to fight on the side of the Shiite Baathists there against Obama and the Mujahideen. And at the same time, as you're saying here, they've really gotten a start on that Islamo-fascist caliphate that only ever existed in Osama bin Laden and George W. Bush's fever dreams. This was a manufactured, ridiculous threat when Bush was citing it in 2005 when he was in the middle of creating it.
In many ways.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, the invasion of Iraq certainly enabled Iran greatly.
Well, yeah, and this whole, Al-Qaeda in Iraq never existed before.
No.
So, man, it's something else. All right, well, so to finish up here, I'm sorry, I know you got to go real quick here, but can you give us your best estimate from what you can tell on the ground there of the American government's position? How much intervention from the West, the Saudis, et cetera?
It doesn't seem that there's going to be direct American intervention or arms being sent anytime soon. I certainly don't get that impression from anyone I'm talking to. And largely because they feel like that command and control structure just doesn't exist and that there is no one to take over if Assad falls. So I don't see us getting involved in the near term any more than we already are.
So what do you think is the point then of, I mean, because really the Saudis and the Qataris, if Obama told them knock it off, they would have knocked it off. I mean, that's basically just plausible deniability for America backing the rebels along.
But you have,
to what end?
You have a lot of regional actors who are willing to fuel this for a long time, regardless of whether the U.S. is involved. Certainly, there's a long history of covert U.S. ops and duplicity. But I think the CIA really got involved with the Qatari weapons shipments more in an attempt to be involved, because something was going to happen anyway. Whether that'll be true of the Saudis sending arms from Jordan, quite possibly the U.S. will be more involved in that. But I still think there's going to be, pressure on those governments to send less arms and not more.
Well, yeah, I mean, it does seem like, doesn't it? Like the politics have sort of shifted where the Israelis, I don't know if you read this the same way, but I thought the Israeli bombings of the missile stocks in Syria was to keep them out of the hands of the Syrian rebels, not to keep them out of the hands of Hezbollah. That was just the cover story. That was
possible.
What they're really scared of, right?
Yes, they're scared of all sides.
Right, so and then Obama has finally gone, I don't know what good it's done really, but he's gone to Vladimir Putin and said, hey, let's solve this thing, apparently in a way that would keep the current regime in power to some degree, which is sort of, you know, I don't know exactly what's going on here other than, or do you think there's really been a change? Like they're backing down and they want to keep Assad now?
I think it's just been fumbled from the get-go. I don't think the policy is that well articulated.
Yeah, they haven't even decided at all what to do.
There does seem, to some extent, there does seem to have been a backing off of the rhetoric of Assad must go, which was sort of the, you know, Hillary Clinton, that was kind of the line until, I don't know exactly, a few months ago. That rhetoric does seem to have been dropped lately.
All right. Well, listen, man, I sure appreciate your journalism and your time on the show as always, David. It's great to talk to you again.
Thank you. Anytime.
All right, everybody. That is the great David Enders, heroic, investigative, well, not just investigative, geez, what do you call him? On the ground reporter in the midst of a horrifying civil war in Syria. Despite word of split over Al-Qaeda, Nusra Front still key in Syria fighting is the headline of his latest at McClatchyDC.com, and we'll be right back after this.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Every month, Plumline Individualist editor Sheldon Richman brings you important news and opinions on policy by heroic FFF President Jacob Hornberger, hard-hitting journalist columnist James Bovard, and others from the best of the libertarian movement. The Future of Freedom tackles the most important issues facing our country, from the bankrupt and insane welfare and regulatory states, to foreign wars and empire, the dismal state of our economy, and ongoing assaults on civil liberties. This society needs peace and freedom for prosperity to prevail. Subscribe to the Future of Freedom in print for just $25 a year, or online for $15 a year at fff.org/subscribe. And hurry up, because this summer they'll be running my articles about the wars in Libya, Syria, and Somalia in the Future of Freedom too. That's fff.org/subscribe for the Future of Freedom. And tell them Scott sent you. Hey y'all, Scott here. First of all, thanks to the show's sponsors and donors who make it possible for me to do this. Secondly, I need more sponsors and more donors if the show is to continue. ScottHorton.org/donate has all the links to use PayPal, Give.org, Google Wallet, WePay.com, and even Bitcoins to make a donation in any amount. You can also sign up for monthly donations of small and medium-sized amounts through PayPal and Give.org. Again, that's ScottHorton.org/donate for all the links. To advertise on the site or the show, email me, scott@scotthorton.org. And thanks.
Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up. Turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner.
Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey, guys, I got his laptop.
Over at AIPAC, the leaders of the Israel lobby in Washington, D.C., they're constantly proclaiming unrivaled influence on Capitol Hill. And they should be proud. The NRA and AARP's efforts make them look like puppy dogs in comparison to the campaigns of intimidation regularly run by the neoconservatives and Israel firsters against their political enemies. But the Israel lobby does not remain unopposed. At the Council for the National Interest, they put America first, insisting on an end to the empire's unjustified support for Israel's aggression against its neighbors and those whose land it occupies, and pushing back against the lobby's determined campaign in favor of U.S. attacks against Israel's enemies. CNI also does groundbreaking work on the trouble with evangelical Christian Zionism and neocon-engineered Islamophobia and drumming up support for this costly and counterproductive policy. Please help support the efforts of the Council for the National Interest to create a peaceful, pro-American foreign policy. Just go to councilforthenationalinterest.org and click donate under About Us at the top of the page. And thanks. Admit it, our public debate has been reduced to reading each other's bumper stickers. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. I made up most of them, and most of those when I was mad as hell about something. So if you hate war, empire, central banking, cops, Republicans, Democrats, gun grabbers, and status of all stripes, go to LibertyStickers.com, and there's a good chance you'll find just what you need for the back of your truck. Own a bookstore? Sell guns at the show? Get the wholesaler's deal. Buy any 100 stickers and they drop down in price to $1 a piece. You can spread the contempt and make a little money too. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.